got that nerd rage. Nerd rage. I got that nerd rage. Nerd rage.
From comics and games to movies and TV, this is the Nerd Show on 1310 KFKA. Now, here are the nerds.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA here in the Allo Communications Studios. We've got Micah and Nick so far. Unfortunately, Scott, a.k.a. Darth Monger, is having a little bit of car troubles and will be making it to the studio very shortly. But we've got an exciting day of interviews and a special guest. We're going to start with Andrew, who's the Vice President of Fan Expo HQ. And we're going to be talking about the Denver FanEx coming up in just a few short weeks. Andrew, welcome to the Nerd Show.
Oh, look, thanks so much for having me.
Gosh, it's going to be an exciting time. So we're just going to get started with a few questions. Again, we're apologies that Scott isn't here yet. What can fans expect from Denver FanEx? And it is Denver FanEx, right?
Yeah, FanEx for Denver. I mean, formerly known, of course, as Denver Comic Con. We're still presenting this event in collaboration with the wonderful Pop Culture Classroom, who, you know, since 2012 has been bringing pop culture to kids through comic books. We have a great show lined up. I mean, it really is another banner year. This is the first year that we've been able to come back full scale. Of course, last year we had a really nice limited edition event that introduced our brand to the fans in Denver and allowed us to get our feet wet. But we've really turned it up a few notches. And it's going to be a full-scale pop culture celebration. I mean, everything, what we do is we focus on all genres. So whether you love comics, sci-fi, horror, anime, gaming, cosplay, fantasy, you'll find it all at FanEx for Denver.
It's so exciting to have this back. I've attended, past iterations of this years before, and I just love, you know, how everything comes together. One of my favorite things, of course, is Artist Alley, to see all the creatives in our region promoting their brand and their products. But it's truly an incredible experience. And, you know, had some years of just some uncertainties with COVID. So it's exciting to have you back in the full swing of things. So what are some things that are going to be different with Fan Expo this year opposed to what folks have experienced even before COVID with this new image, this new branding? What are some big highlights and things to take away?
Yeah, well, look, FanEx HQ, we are the largest Comic-Con producer globally, so we're really excited to use that weight to bring in some really top guests. So obviously, a lot of people are coming to meet their heroes, to meet the people that have breathed life into those characters that we know and love. But as you say, shopping, so important. So we have hundreds of incredible retailers, and so important for these small businesses to be back meeting with their customers. We've really taken a new angle on a lot of the programming because, you know, once you've met your celebrity, it's about celebrating with the community. So we have an awesome creator stage with lots of different kind of programming, like demos on from the Star Wars droid builders and 3D printing and, you know, pop culture themed podcasts and things like that. We have an amazing family area that is powered by Pop Culture Classroom. Lots of interactive activities because people want to be busy. They want to get their, you know, they want to get their hands dirty and actually, you know, really immerse themselves in all things fandom. So we'll be making potions and slime and have different sort of activities for the whole family to do. And I think that's one thing that always stands out to me, that people come up and they say, well, I didn't really think there'd be something here for me. I didn't think these conventions really had something that would appeal to me. And yet more and more I'm finding as the fandom broadens, there is truly something for everyone at Fan Expo Denver.
Oh, absolutely. I think you know, even 10, 15 years ago, there was just that stigma about what it means to be a nerd, to be a cosplayer, and, you know, Comic-Cons were the place for them. And I think you spoke about it perfectly of, you know, there's so much out there in the world of nerdiness and the fandom that brings people together and families together. And it's kind of unexpected when you're there of, oh my gosh, this truly is for everybody. You know, whether you're a Star Wars fan, Star Trek, comic books, gaming, I mean, there's truly an exciting opportunity and experience for folks. For somebody who's coming for the first time or maybe are teetering on the edge of, is this something I'd enjoy or not? What are some words of encouragement to help get them in the door and break through that barrier of their first experience, you know, going down to Denver and experiencing this Fan Expo?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I would say that costumes are encouraged but not required. A lot of people think, "Oh boy, I've got to dress up." And we've seen a huge increase in the amount of people that come and walk the show floor and celebrate their characters by dressing up as them. But that's certainly, as I say, encouraged but not required. And I think the other thing is, I would just go to our website, fanexpodenver.com, and check out all the layers of things that you can experience. I mean, if you look at our guest list alone, you can see we have current working actors, but we also have a lot of nostalgia there as well. If you're a fan of comics, you'll see that we have some of the biggest heavyweights in comics at our event. And I think it's important to remember the legacy of these events. They really started as comic book events. They started with a focus of comics, and that's so important to Fan Expo HQ to continue that legacy of comics. But I think ultimately, our brand promise is to deliver a place where people can discover something new, celebrate pop culture to its fullest, but ultimately find a sense of belonging. And I think what's wonderful about the platform we create is that sense of belonging can be different for everyone, but everyone is welcome. So between all of that, I think, you know, you've definitely got to try it out, and more than likely, I'd say you're going to be hooked.
Absolutely. And we do have Scott in the studio now. He just rolled out of the Uber that dropped them off.
Yeah.
Welcome back,
Scott. We're talking
to
Andrew Moyse, the VP of Fan Expo.
Yeah.
So thank you for being on. We appreciate this.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Sorry I'm late.
Hey, Scott. Welcome. No problem.
You know, Andrew, I am excited about your guest list. You have guests from Sons of Anarchy. You have The Hobbits. You have Anthony Daniels. You have so many people from Star Wars, from Clerks. I mean, you were talking about nostalgia. That's nostalgia.
Yeah, Andrew, how do you go about, you know, connecting this guest list to make sure you're getting absolutely everyone connected so you can touch the Star Wars base, the Clerks base, the Sons of Anarchy base? So kind of who's the brains behind what guests you're trying to bring in?
Well, often the brains behind it are the fans, because the fans tell us what they want. So that is a really good starting point. But then, really, it's just a lot of sleepless nights trying to manage schedules. And, you know, as you can see, this is a mix of people that are working in the industry, people that are sort of legacy icons. So it's really just managing those schedules and doing the very best we can to deliver these heroes to their fans. I mean, if you look at the Hobbits reunion in itself, so these incredible actors from this Lord of the Rings trilogy, Elijah Wood, Dominic Moynihan, Sean Astin, Billy Boyd, all together on stage. Again, we're so lucky as Fan Expo HQ to have some different platforms around North America where we can deliver. And we have already had the Four Hobbits on stage as part of a tour. And, you know, just seeing them up there is such a huge feat. And as I say, it's a lot of hours of just navigating schedules and back and forth. But when it happens, it's so special because the room is just electric. And to see them all there together laughing and connecting and sharing those behind-the-scenes, one-of-a-kind insights to these movies that we know and love, I mean, it's a one-of-a-kind experience and truly a once-in-a-lifetime. But yeah, we work to hit off all the different genres, as I say. We're multi-genre events, from comics, sci-fi, anime, of course. So you can see that reflected in the guests that we engage to come to the event.
Well, I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, and here on The Nerd Show, we just love a bit of everything. Andrew, we'll be right back after this break. Love to learn a little bit more about what to expect coming up in just a few weeks for Fan Expo down in Denver. So stay tuned, listeners. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. We have Andrew Moise, the VP of Fan Expo. We're talking about Fan Expo Denver coming up July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, please take a look online and see all the incredible experiences that you might have. Of course, the music of Howard Shore and Lord of the Rings just playing as our bumper music. I'm a big fan. And you know what? I just got to plug this in. Selfless plug. I do those often. But, you know, in the Shire, you know, Bilbo's celebrating his 111th birthday. Well, the Greeley Philharmonic Orchestra, of which I'm the CEO, is celebrating its 111th season. So I feel like this is kind of serendipitous, Andrew, to have the Hobbits coming in and Colorado be celebrating a lot of 111ths. Even though Bilbo won't be there, you know, that's all right. I just like the tie in there.
Yeah, well, we always do our best to deliver all that we can. But it just goes to show you, I think, how fandom has definitely broadened and that it dominoes right out through the community. And it's so great for us to be sort of at the center of that, delivering, you know, one of the biggest pop culture celebrations to the city.
That's great, Andrew. So, you know, I was going to ask, and you just mentioned it, you talked about the fan community, and there is, you know, obviously a ton of great stuff. There's a ton of great programs and shows and different interviews that are going on. But what are some of the, maybe some of the fan events that are going on that A, might be unique to FanX, and B, also unique to Denver that you could share with our audience?
Well, look, I always have to come back to Pop Culture Classroom. I mean, they started an incredible program a number of years back where they offer sort of subsidized educational programs. And really, it's driving their mission forward, inspiring a love of learning and literacy, diversity and community through the pop culture medium, through comic books. So that's really quite unique to this event. That's a legacy piece of this event that I think is very special. And it's so important because it's creating the fans of the future, which is a huge piece for us in Denver, and something that we hold very, very dear to this event in particular. But especially coming back from where we've been, I think over the past couple of years, when I look at the events, really the fans are the stars of the show. I mean, these are community-driven, passion-driven events that are only as great as our wonderful fans who are attending them. And there's some different places where you see that expressed throughout the show. First of all, it's just spontaneous connections on the show floor. People stopping each other to get a photo and talk about the costume they're wearing or talk about the piece that they've just bought from a retailer or an artist. It's that sense of community and that sense of shared experience that I think is so special. We also have an incredible cosplay red carpet. So this is just a step and repeat, a red carpet, and everyone who's been working on their costumes can come and walk the red carpet. It's not a competition. It's not about awards. It's purely about celebrating the incredible work that the fans have done to work on their costumes and celebrate the characters that they know and love. And this has become a real banner event at our shows. You see people, three or four people deep, sort of peeking through to get a glimpse of their fellow fans and cheer them on. And that really, for me, encapsulates, I think, a huge piece of what these events are all about nowadays.
Fans are the reason, well, that so many of our loves, our nerdy love, continues and grows. Andrew, for the years, I know it takes an army to create an event like this. Like you said earlier, those sleepless nights to make sure everything lines up. But what's something that fills your cup or fills your bucket, you know, that no matter how many sleepless nights you've had, that you're getting up the next morning and you get to experience from these events that keeps you going, keeps you and your team going?
Well, look, it's those priceless moments. It's those fan connections. It truly is electric. I mean, you've been on the show floor. You can see it in those celebrity lineups. I always think of, you know, sort of the modern-day Walt Disney himself, Stan Lee. We were privileged enough to have him at a number of our events. And I think the way he interacted with his fans and the way he inspired them, for me, is a real benchmark of what people can come away with. I mean, you see people walk into the line of the celebrity that they have just admired for so many years. They get that chance to bask in their glow, and they walk away 10 feet higher, you know, and you see the tears and the energy, and we sort of look at each other and say, wow, that really makes it worthwhile. And I think, too, those special moments where you see 2,000 people sitting in a room waiting for the four hobbits to take to the stage. I mean, everyone in that room knows what a special opportunity this is because we follow them. We have such great access to these celebrities now, and we understand that they haven't been together for a number of years. So we know what a special, unique moment it is to see them all together on stage. So I think there's that. And then I think the last piece for me is just that energy moments before we open the doors. You know that the retailers are putting the finishing touches on their booths. The fans are lined up outside the door. And it's just that anticipation of a full-scale pop culture celebration that I go, yep, I can feel it in the air, and it's been so worthwhile.
Okay, so follow-up question to that is, I'm the only person in the studio that is old enough to have actually been alive when Star Wars came out, and that's kind of my main passion. But I have those visceral moments as a young boy, young man, and just loving things that were going on in sci-fi. Do you have one of those? Do you have one of those moments where, for you personally as a fan, you go, I remember this happening and it either changed my life or it made me love, you know, the pop culture community or environment or a certain universe that was just amazing to you that really has been a driving force for you over the last several years as you've been doing events like this?
Yeah, I mean, look, I came from a very different background. I came from a background that wasn't, you know, I haven't come up through the world of fandom. I've come more from an event sort of professional perspective. And initially, I was just working on these events in sort of an additional capacity to another role that I was in. But what I found is that it really draws you in. And truly, and I know I've spoken about this a lot tonight, but I think it's just so important based on where we are sort of in terms of coming through the pandemic and coming back together. It really is that extraordinary sense of community. I mean, I've witnessed proposals, I've witnessed weddings, I've witnessed, you know, friendships that are celebrated just over the show because people come in from long distances to see each other. And that, for me, is just what is so special, just knowing that I'm a part of that community now. I think I've found that sense of belonging. And my team, too, we have a number of new team members, and they look at me and they say, we get the opportunity to create these once-in-a-lifetime experiences. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, than to see people truly celebrating these one-of-a-kind opportunities and knowing, you know what, we had something to do with that. And we're excited about making it even bigger and better the following year.
Talking about what it takes to create something like this, do you have just an estimate of numbers of how many hours go into this, whether that's volunteer hours in addition to all the staffing hours to be able to put on a 3-day event of this magnitude?
Oh, it's just, it's nonstop. I mean, these are very complex events because there's so many different types of events within them. I mean, it's not only the show floor and all the retailers and artists. We're also navigating hours and hours of programming. So, you know, you don't just come to walk the floor and shop. There's 20 to 25 rooms that have constant programming throughout. So that's a huge task to organize all of that. And you'll see that actually what we do is we put up a draft schedule and everyone has a look through the draft schedule. We look to the fans to help us with that because then they'll look at it and they say, well, look, Anthony Daniels is on the same time as Billy West. I was really hoping I'd be able to see them both. Or, you know, Matthew Lewis is on the same time as Carl Weathers. So that really helps us to navigate the hours of programming. But then also we're navigating getting all of these incredible people in and out of the city, too. We're housing people in hotels. We're working with the facility. So they really are unique kind of events, and it truly is nonstop because there's just so many different layers to them. And I think, you know, we have an awesome team in Denver that delivers this event, but we all help each other across the portfolio as well. So there's never a shortage of things to do, and it definitely eats up the hours, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, Andrew, thank you so much. For those listeners, July 1st through 3rd at the Colorado Convention or Denver Convention Center for Denver Fan Expo 2022. Get your tickets now. You don't want to miss out. That was VP Andrew Moise here on The Nerd Show, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Nerd Show, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA here in the Allo Communications Studios. We are back with another interview. There's so much going on in Colorado over the next several weeks, and if you're not already going to Denver Fan Expo July 1 through 3, and you're in the northern Colorado region, we've got a former host of The Nerd Show. And special guest, Kevin McFarling, a.k.a. Farley.
Hey, what's up, guys?
In studio, Darthus Pincus.
I'm sorry, this week you're going to have to be Darthus Pincus. I didn't create anything for you.
Well, thank you for that lovely introduction.
Nick was Darthus Pincus a couple weeks ago.
Yeah? Can we just stick with Farley? Or is that expired?
Well, I was going to make a Darth Farley, but then I realized
Darth
I'm busy.
Farley. Okay.
Darth Farley.
That sounds interesting. Let's record it after the show.
Darth Farley. We'll
plug it in for when we're in post.
Yeah,
right? We'll fix
totally.
It. We'll clean this up in post. There's no cleanup in
no,
post.
There's no
there
cleanup
no clean
in post.
This is as dirty as it gets.
Yeah.
So we're coming up on the 100th anniversary of the Greeley Stampede, a monumental year. And Farley, how long have you worked for the Stampede?
This will be my fifth year working for the Stampede, if I did my math correctly. Yeah, 5 years. So it is. I mean, you said it's the 100th, so it's a huge event for us. We're super excited. We have a lot of fun things that we have planned for everybody this year. And so, you know, as you know, with the Stampede, we try to get as many events as we can inside of the huge event that we have to have something for everyone. And so actually this year we added a little something for the nerds this year. And
it's definitely something for me.
You probably didn't have anything to do with that, right?
Nothing at all. I would never do anything like this. But yeah, we actually added the Lego Creation Festival specifically for M over here.
For Micah.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's right. And you know what? It's June 25th, so I can actually I can go if someone covers for me, Angel.
cover. So it's actually, I think you're looking at the brochure.
Mm-hmm. I've got this right here.
It's a huge brochure that I spent many hours on, so everybody should pick one up and look at it.
It looks like Lego is misspelled.
No, you're wrong. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to see if you...
But we did have a change on the time, though. It is now from 1 to 4, I believe, for the Lego competition. That's where people are actually going to be building.
Out. Who decided to? Did That's they up. Do this after you printed it? Just
it is a work in progress, my friend. So everything can change at any given moment. So we are always working on these things. But yeah, so everybody can come out and take a look at all the builds. We had an open registration for builders to plan on coming out, and we have 21 teams or individuals that are going to be coming out and competing to be the Greeley Stampede Lego Creation Festival master.
So how does this work? Do they just dump Legos out and they have to create something? Yeah. Do they have any instructions? Are they coming like Great British Bake Off where they already have their plans and their recipes, if you will?
Totally. So what we're doing is it's going to be blind, essentially. So we gave them a theme of that it has to celebrate the Greeley Stampede.
So not a Broncos logo.
No Broncos logos, no.
Those are hard
to
make.
Sorry. Unless you do a Greeley Stampede-themed Broncos logo, which doesn't make sense. But and we're going to give them basically a bin of Legos. It's about 1,200 pieces. I think it's a little over 1,200 pieces. And they just know the idea of what they're going to want to make, and they have to figure out how to do what they want to do with the pieces they have. So everybody is given the exact same pieces and the exact same amount of pieces and the exact same amount of time to do whatever it is that they're going to do. They do have an opportunity to come out and take a look at the pieces prior, but it's like a very brief peek, here's the pieces. They don't really get to dig around a whole lot and scope them out and like take pictures and stuff like that. It's just here it is, close the lid, and they go home and they brainstorm and try to figure out what they're going to do. And so they come back and they've got the 4 hours to create their masterpieces. So we're working with the NOLA Creative Company. And so Amanda actually was on the show a long time ago and talked about this. And that's sort of where the whole thing stemmed from is her idea for doing the Lego Creation Festivals, and we worked together to bring it to the Stampede, and we're really excited to see what people come up with. I think it's going to be really exciting.
I think, you know, an option to have the Broncos, you could just have like Blucifer type of thing with Miss Rodeo Colorado
there you
on
go.
Top pictured. I mean, there's a way to get a
but
Bronco.
You have to make sure that you have the right amount of blue pieces. And I'm assuming that there are going to be a lot of
There's going to be a lot of variety. Yeah.
And that's... Now, are you going to include orange? Because back in my day, there was no such thing as orange.
I cannot tell you the colors that are inside of the set.
So you're not choosing.
Well, no. We bought the sets.
Okay.
But the sets are just as is. And so what we did is we opened up the sets that we bought and put them inside of a tub. So they don't have any kind of preconceived notion as to what the set is. It's in a blank tub, basically. So they
now,
have no
can
idea
I
what
know
is.
What the sets are?
No, you can't.
What are you doing with the Legos sets afterwards?
I'm keeping them, and I'm going to build my own creations.
Oh. Can we be best friends, Farley?
Oh, that's going to be tough.
Do the contestants know about the categories of which they'll be judged? And is it fan-judged? Do you have a team of judges that'll be walking around with a clipboard and pens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's going to be judges there, and they have criteria that they're going to be looking for as they're building. And ultimately, it comes down to the judges and picking which ones they think is the best out of each of the three categories. So we have a family category, a team category, and individual. So we'll have three winners. We also have a kids build that we're going to do. So the first 20 kids that register by 12:30 that day will also get a small set of Legos that they can build. And they have about a half an hour to build something. And so they'll have like a little mini thing. And they get to keep their Legos afterwards. The contestants do not get to keep the Legos. We'll actually hold on to them and we'll either recycle them for next year or we'll find some creative thing to do with them.
Okay, so if you are very, very, very immature like me, do you count as a kid? Because my niece is 9, and she is already she's 12. By the age of 9, mm-hmm. she was more mature than me. So
sure.
I think that I probably should count as a kid, and I would like to keep the Legos, unless they're Duplo.
If you shave your beard completely off and you're... I don't know. I think you have to shave your hair, too. I don't know.
I can do that.
Now, he looks like Curious George when he shaves.
I will do a lot for Legos.
You know, some people look a lot younger when they shave.
I've been told that I do look a little younger.
I don't know if you can pull off a 10-year-old, though. We'll see. Try it, and let's see what happens.
What if I brought my nephew?
Escorted out by Stampede security. Yeah,
I'll make sure security's on standby.
What age?
Did you see this guy coming through?
What age are the kids?
For the kids build?
Yeah.
That one is 10 and under.
10 and under, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do they get the same criteria, the same expectations of Stampede-themed?
Yep.
So if they were doing their homework, they'd be talking to their relatives who've been in town for a mm-hmm. while, who maybe have been to a few Stampedes before.
Yep.
But, when it comes to Greeley Stampede, there are so many different elements that you can create. You could do a Ferris wheel that moves. Yep. You could do,
You can go with food
sheep,
if you want to.
Mutton Busters, events.
You could do a Farley's face.
You could. I mean, it's face of the Stampede, I guess, so why not?
The cowboy hats, get it in with Trent Johnson from Greeley Hat Works, maybe get some molds of that. But
I mean, if you do a life-size Lego cowboy hat, extra points.
Now, do you have to register before the day or
correct.
Can you just walk
in?
Yeah,
so registration is closed now because we have all the teams filled. But anybody can come in and look at what people are building and kind of scope out. We're also going to have the Lego movie playing in the background, so you can sit and watch the Lego movie. It's inside, so you can also enjoy some air conditioning, which during the Stampede can be pretty sweet.
You mean pretty cool?
Things. Pretty cool, yes. Cool off in the air conditioning.
Pretty sweet unless you're having a sweet beverage.
Sure. You can have a sweet beverage. We have plenty of those at the Stampede.
Are you going to be participating in this?
I will not be, but you know who will be? Kid Farley.
Really?
Yeah, Kid Farley, my son, is a huge Lego fan, and so he actually will be competing. And he's been trying to get the same information out of me as you have. Well, what kind of Legos are they, Dad? Like, what can they do? And I'm like, nope, can't. Nope.
Legos
nope.
with color.
So you don't have them blindfolded
made out of
at
plastic.
Night with a bunch of Legos saying, all right, build me a horse stall. Build me this. Build
totally.
Me a trailer. Go, go, go. Time.
I would, yeah. But I mean, he's very self-motivated when it comes to Legos. I mean, he spends hours and hours just sitting in his room building all kinds of creations. He doesn't follow the instructions. The
Good
first
for
thing
him.
He does is throw the instructions away and builds whatever the heck he wants to. And I mean, I've sent Micah several pictures mm-hmm. of what he builds, and he's he built some really cool stuff, so I think he's going to do pretty well. I'm excited to see what he comes up with. He's partnered with my dad, Paul Farley. We've never given him a name before. But so he's going to actually help him out, and I think it's going to be mostly just having my dad just supervise and make sure that he's staying on track. Because my son isn't going to let him touch anything.
Make sure he doesn't make his spaceship. Make sure he makes
correct.
Something.
He knows the theme. He's been brainstorming. He's been asking me questions about like what to build and what he can build and stuff like that. So he has ideas rolling through his head, but he's keeping it open because he doesn't know what pieces he has. So he's got several ideas in his mind so that when he gets there and he sees the pieces, he's like, okay, I can do this with this.
What about a cowboy like in the middle of the Greeley Stampede, like falling in the middle of a hole?
I don't know what that has to do with the Greeley Stampede, but...
Well, like, it would be at the Greeley Stampede. He falls in the middle of a time hole.
You're going to make a Stranger Things theme?
An Outer Range theme.
Yeah, an Outer Range theme at the Greeley Stampede.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. That's a stretch.
I don't think the judges would like it too much, but you can
do it again. What about a UFO at the Greeley Stampede?
If it's the UFO from the carnival, the Starship 3000, then yes, do it.
What strategies would you recommend to the teams that are here? You know, do you divide up your pieces and colors?
Yeah.
This is the first time you're doing it, so what advice do you have?
So when I have watched the competitors do things like this, one of the first things they do is separate out the pieces into colors because, I mean, that's one of the biggest things is knowing what colors you have to work with and what shapes and sizes and whatnot because that also changes your idea of what you're going to make and how you're going to do it. And so I think that's a great start is sorting your pieces, first of all, and seeing exactly what you have to work with and then formulate your plans. I mean, they have, like I said, 4 hours to do the build. So it's a pretty decent amount of time, but it's also 1,200 pieces with no instructions. So you're building a custom thing from scratch. So it's going to be stressful. They don't have to use all of the pieces. So I guess I should put that out there. But they have 1,200 pieces to work with.
Well, this is the inaugural, what are you calling again?
The Lego Creation Festival.
Lego Creation Festival. Nice. Saturday, June 25th at the Greeley Stampede. It's 100th anniversary. It's too late to sign up, but if you want to see some Lego maniacs going at it, 1 to 4 p.m., right? 1 to 4?
1 to 4.
At the Greeley Stampede. Farley, thank you so much for being on.
Anytime.
Stay tuned for more of The Nerd Show. Welcome back to The Nerd Show, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Boy, a lot of information coming at you with all the events. Scott, how do you think you'd do in a Lego competition?
I don't know, maybe okay. I don't think I've watched Lego Masters and I've seen all the different things and I've watched my sons build for years and years and years and the creativity that comes around, what you can do with certain shapes to make something that looks completely different, I'm just not great at.
To me, it's like, I'm a classically trained musician, so I do best with sheet music, meaning with Legos, I do best with instructions.
Right.
I would not excel as a jazz improviser because that's not how my brain works. I think that's the same with maybe Lego builders. You could be an excellent Lego builder, but once you take away those instructions, I would just completely crumble and not have that vision, that creativity.
I can only make certain things. I only make spaceships. A lot of my spaceships are kind of the same concept because it goes based off of Star Trek.
Oh, I would have never guessed.
I do need I do need to kind of diversify my ideas, and I do have a Lego ideas book that I bought at a Lego exhibit. Oh gosh, it was over a year ago at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science.
Nice.
Well,
it was a great exhibit.
Well, Lego of these interviews and move forward. Oh, that's a great eye roll. The more eye rolls I get on those puns, the better.
You know what Jerry Schimmel thinks of your joke?
It is no good.
Well, that's what he thinks of your joke.
Sorry, Jerry.
Yeah, you want to know what he thinks of Obi-Wan? I have no idea. What did you guys think?
We talked briefly in our last segment a little bit of Obi-Wan and a little bit of Miss Marvel that came out. I would just say, I guess, one word, underwhelming.
For Obi-Wan?
For both.
I think we have to keep in mind that Miss Marvel is not really targeted to us.
I haven't been a teenage girl before, so maybe that's why I couldn't resonate.
I think it's more going to be for teenagers. I thought for it being a teenage thing, it was all right. It ended better than it started off, but it was okay.
I didn't know what to expect with it. I think I liked the beginning more because I like that development. You know, I know the teenage angst is a bit of a turnoff for grown-ups, but I had to go back and remember, I was kind of an awkward teenager, and I still am an awkward human being. But overall,
and I out awkward you.
I'm curious, you know, I don't know who this character is. I don't know what to expect. So I think, you know, it's kind of a blank canvas for what Marvel's trying to do.
Well, and I think they've got a good opportunity where you're taking someone who's a fan of something and now they get to experience it. And it's in a universe that having superpowers is not that unique that everybody's freaking out running away. They're almost like, okay, cool. And, you know, we saw that in the mid-credit scene where they're like, okay, you know, pick her up. We're going to have to talk to this girl. And, you know, I think there's an interesting dynamic that'll develop. I'm excited to see what happens about the grandmother, because obviously the mom knew something about that bracelet and didn't want her to have anything to do with it. And she said, oh, you need to put that away. And so I believe that there's going to be a backstory that's going to develop there that's going to be interesting to show that the mom's tried really hard to keep her away from this. But there's this, you know, deep, dark family secret that her grandmother was this superhero, you know, hundreds of years ago, kind of like a Wonder Woman or something sort of. And we're going to see that develop. And I'm actually kind of interested because the story is going to be fairly unique.
Absolutely. It's very original.
Yeah.
I really liked the animation. I like, you know, because my mind's that way, just very creative, always daydreaming. Could be the ADHD, too. That's undiagnosed, self-diagnosed, I should say. But I thought that it was really well done for her to be, you know, getting lectured by the principal or her school counselor and just her mind's kind of going and, you know, movements on the walls. And I thought that was incredibly creative. And you know, her nerdy best friend. I just like their chemistry, their dynamics,
those
friendships that they have. Yeah, we can still be really close friends too. But overall, I liked it. I liked that that first episode, and I don't know how many they're going to have. If this is just a one off, if this is introducing a new character that may be, you know, part of the Avengers or whatever the Avengers looks like down the road.
I don't know. I haven't done any research on Ms. Marvel, so I don't know. And I did that on purpose because I just wanted to experience this from the very beginning. I didn't want to have any, you know, lead up or any insight into it. So far I'm enjoying it.
I haven't really read any like fan complaints or, you know, fans, oh, this is great. I just wanted to keep it pure with my thoughts, and I thought it was okay. It's never going to be something that I absolutely love, or I just wanted to see if it was something that I thought was going to be okay or something I was going to not like. And it's, so far it's okay.
Well, let's take a question to wrap up Ms. Marvel. Of course, we'll talk about this in the weeks to come, but will she find her bike? Well, that'll be one of the first things that she...
Nope.
You think the bike's gone?
Bike's gone.
But she's not going to need it. She's going to She has her powers.
That's right.
Well, she needs to learn how to control those powers and what they actually are.
Which will help her to not need her bike.
Well, you know what? If AvengerCon ever came to Denver, well, it might not. But you know what you can do is go down to the Denver Fan Expo
Denver
and get your own version of AvengerCon. And anyone who's listening that might have a bracelet of their grandmother's, maybe just put it on and take it down to Denver Fan Expo and
see what happens.
See what happens.
Yeah,
exactly.
Do the step and repeat, and you'll get your photo taken.
Exactly.
And
then we'll be ready to interview you on the Nerd Show for what you've newly discovered about yourself.
Perfect. I like it.
Well, let's go on to the other review in the last few minutes that we have left is Obi-Wan. You know, for the amount of money that Disney has, I liked this. I have some theories, but I tell you, at the end, that little battle with the T-47s looked like something out of a video game, I thought. I was a little underwhelmed with that little fight sequence there.
You know, I think I got taken out of the entire episode right after she landed in, you know, the Inquisitor, you know, Master, you know, Fortress or whatever it's called. I was just like, you know, and I've never been on a military base, but I have to imagine that they're not like that. That just looked like a ridiculous amount of people trying to look busy that weren't busy. And then seriously, the little scanning area that you had to go through, you just walk around. I mean, to me, it looked like we were trying to make stuff look like Star Wars, and they just tried way too hard to make it work. And I, you know, I love the beginning. I love the Rebel base on Jambia. And it was like, okay, yes, this is raw. This is right. And then it's like, well, we build this base and we're going to have 10,000 stormtroopers and Imperial officers in different garb and different gear. And
Where
and
are
four,
they?
Four different. What do you mean, where are they?
Like, at some point, there was nobody. She would walk through the halls, and there was no security.
Well, but then in other spots, there's 1,000 people mm-hmm. milling around and talking, and they're all going in different directions.
It's like Family Guy's Blue Harvest.
Yeah, it was just like, seriously.
Star Wars stuff. Yeah. Like, we're very busy. Empire stuff. That Darth Vader walks by, and they're stapling documents, pretending to be busy. It was dumb.
I'm struggling with it, and I almost think that they're trying way too hard to overemphasize something about the Empire, and that we're getting good Rebel stuff, but we're getting oversaturated with the Empire stuff, and it's like, I just don't get it.
Well, Obi-Wan sure had his hallway moment of fame, the blue lightsaber. Of course, you had Luke in the green, you had Vader in the red in Rogue One, and now we get Obi-Wan taking out stormtroopers in the dark, which is pretty cool. He seems to be getting...
But it took him multiple shots.
Well, you know, he's rusty. One thing that I want to talk about is the tomb. You know, that shows the sinister empire of all the, you know, were they Jedi? Are they captured? Are they dead? Are they in stasis? You know, I think there's a lot of explanation there. And whose are they? Whose trophies?
Yeah.
I mean, you get the Padawan. So I have a theory, and I know we have to leave it there, but we want you to miss it. Is it fair that I get a theory? And we could pass it on to see what you think. But one was the Padawan from the opening sequence of this series. And, you know, my thoughts, you know, if... the third sister was one of those Padawans at the beginning. If maybe Anakin comes back to the Jedi Temple and, like, her first deed as a Inquisitor is to kill one of her peers, and that's him.
Maybe, but I think the age of them might not work. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of different ways we can go with that. The one thing that I wanted to make sure that we got on air now is that in Episode 2, we get introduced to Coran Horn. And so when Jaffa's trying to get the mother and the son off planet to Corellia, and it's the mother and the son, it said, well, your son has, you know, Jedi abilities. Mm. And in the credits, he's listed as Coran.
And so that goes way back
to way back
the expanded
into the
universe.
Old expanded universe, some of the X-Wing and Jedi. So that part I'm loving and keep coming with that. But the rest, we could do better.
Well,
they could do better.
We'll see how this week's episode that aired earlier today that we'll review next week does. But what an action-packed episode of The Nerd Show. Stay tuned, podcast listeners, for some of Micah's musings, or take a look at 1310kfka.com to get the full episode of The Nerd Show. Nerdians, you all stay nerdy. We'll see you next week.
Welcome back to The Nerd Show. This is the post-credits scene, the bonus stuff that you're not going to hear on a 103.1 and 1310 KFK, but you can find it on 1310kfk.com. You can find it on our Facebook page, Nerd Show 1310, I believe. I don't get on the Facebook page that often, so I apologize if it's wrong. You can also find it on Spotify and a bunch of other social media online places. I don't know. I don't do the internet that much. Sorry, guys. Anyway, we have not had a chance to talk about The Boys. We have not had a chance to talk about The Orville. And, you know, that's because they're less popular than the Star Wars universe, and they're less popular than the Marvel universe, and we have a lot of stuff that we have to talk about. And I mean, boy, this June, everything is coming out. I mean, you have Stranger Things, which is a top priority topic. You have Obi-Wan, which is a top priority topic. So we have to cover both of those. I mean, I want to talk about so much, but there's just so much going on. I think this is the world that we're gonna have a lot of times. Hopefully it's easier in July. Anyway, this gives me an opportunity, as Nick has left and as Scott has left, this gives me an opportunity to really quickly talk about the boys, where we are in the boys, and what they're doing right now is they're not releasing all eight episodes, which I think this is probably what's going to be the future of all platforms. And this is probably something Netflix needs to do so they don't have, oh, I'm going to have my Netflix and then I'm going to cancel it. Have it then cancel it because I watched all eight episodes. You get that with the Orville. They're doing that week to week. And now with the boys. The boys started out a couple weeks ago with three episodes. Now they're doing the rest. And I think they have 10 episodes this season. I'm going to say 10 episodes because they have been doing 10 episodes the last two seasons. So I'm going to go with 10. Anyway, Butcher currently is working for the CIA to take down some soups. Huey is also working for the government, but he's working for Senator Newman. As you may know, she's the person who exploded people's heads in season two. Homelander has become basically a dictator, and he's taking over Vought. And the guy has gone nuts. And I have to say the actor is doing such an amazing job. Maeve, I actually like what she's doing now. So she's plotting with Butcher against Homelander. She's trying to find a way to get rid of Homelander, which is a great idea. The boys are now searching in episode four to find a weapon that will kill Homelander. Homelander has forced Starlight to be his, quote, girlfriend, not in real life, but his girlfriend for the media. Because Starlight, at the beginning of the season, she has such a positive rating, and Homelander has such a negative rating after his girlfriend turned out to be a Nazi. And, of course, Butcher has done something that I think is against what he truly stands for, which is he has taken Temp V. You know, Compound V is the compound that they give to babies to make them superheroes, and now they were trying to perfect it for adults so that, you know, we can have more superheroes. So Butcher has taken Temp V. That's a 24-hour approximately superhero serum, which is kind of out of character for him and also causes some consternation within the boys, because if you're against superheroes and suddenly you are a superhero, that's going to upset some people. So I like where this is going. I'm not going to give season three, and we're four episodes in, I'm not going to give season three as great of a rating so far as I would seasons one and two. I think it's still good. I think I like where it's going. But, boy, we're finding out a lot of stuff. On to the Orville. The Orville New Horizons. So if you guys don't know about the Orville is basically a very, very expensive fan fiction. If you guys don't know who the creator of Family Guy is, Seth MacFarlane is a huge nerd. He loves Star Wars. He loves Star Trek. And he has created an homage to Star Trek. It ran for two seasons on regular TV, and it's now on Hulu. So regular TV, it was called The Orville. Now on Hulu, it's called The Orville New Horizons. I really dig season two. Season two really took a step up. Season one was good. It was kind of trying to find its way, but it was good. It was episodic. Season two stepped up big time. I mean, it became more dramatic. The acting stepped up. Of course, you're going to have some positive, some negative. Seth MacFarlane's not the best actor in the world, but the direction that they took it was really, really great. And The Orville New Horizons is second episode in, and so far it has not disappointed. The first episode deals with the crew's feelings towards a character, Isaac, after the end of the season two of The Orville. And what happened in season two is Isaac's people attacked basically everyone, and Isaac was a part of that, not by choice. He was not by choice a part of that. He was, you know, taken over, essentially. He's a He's a robot. He's an android. He's kind of supposed to be that Commander Data character. And starting off New Horizons, he's basically an outsider now because everyone's uncomfortable with him. People are doing some really horrible things, saying some horrible things to him. Yeah, he has no emotions, but he exhibits feelings without having feelings. And that's a really good episode covering, you know, bigotry. And I found that to be incredible. The special effects, by the way, have also taken a step up. And episode two. So episode two is interesting. It's kind of a combination of two of my favorite episodes of The Next Generation. Genesis, which is season 7, and Identity Crisis, which is in season 4. Both are horror episodes of The Next Generation, which you don't get that often. You maybe have 4 or 5 episode horror-type episodes of The Next Generation. But this was kind of a scary episode. And it opened it up for a new enemy. So while there's a negotiation with what was their old enemy, the big bad, supposed to be the Romulans, now they've created a new enemy for them. So I really like where the Orville is going. I actually, and this is because I'm a Star Trek fan, so take this for what it is. I like the Orville better than I like the Boys. And again, this is because I am a Star Trek fan. I'm a Star Trek The Next Generation fan. I think you guys should watch it. It is a drama. The first season was trying to find its way. So the first season had a little bit of humor in it and some drama in it. It's become more of a drama with just a little bit of comedy. But I think this is good if you're a Star Trek The Next Generation fan, if you're an original series fan. I think you'll dig this. I really like it. It's not for everybody. This is why I'm talking about it in the post-credit scene. Because it's not for everybody. It's not going to be the most popular thing out there. So thank you for joining me in the post-credit scene. Don't forget that that Farley's Lego event for the Greeley Stampede is 1-4 June 25th. And Denver FanX coming up July 1st through the 3rd. This has been Micah Kilpatrick for The Nerd Show. Brought to you by Right Coast Pizza. Guys, stay nerdy.